The following talk was recorded at Libra Planet 2023, Charting the Course, an annual conference on current issues in ethics, social justice, and technology from the Free Software Foundation. Libra Planet is a live conference, and speakers often use slides and other visual tools to assist their presentation. You can see the videos of these talks at media.libraplanet.org or on the FSF PeerTube channel. Libra Planet speakers do not represent the mission of the Free Software Foundation. We host speakers talking about their uses of free software in different kinds of political and commercial work. The FSF supports their freedom, but does not take a position on any political issues other than those necessary to uphold the principles of free software. Like all the FSF's work on behalf of the freedom of all computer users, Libra Planet is made possible by thousands of individuals. To keep our work going, please consider becoming an associate member via my.fsf.org/join. or by making a donation at my.fsf.org/donate. You can stay informed by subscribing to our newsletter, The Free Software Supporter, at fsf.org/fss. For more information on Libra Planet, please visit libraplanet.org/conference.
About do-it-yourself browsers. The stage is yours. Thank you.
So our presentation is, first let me introduce us as Agaric. We will introduce ourselves individually shortly, but we'll be presenting on the question of whether or not developers should get paid for their work. And just for a little bit, to preface this question a little bit more, I realize that there's been a little bit of there's many different ways that free software gets developed, right? And how it gets funding, whether or not it gets funding. There's a lot of work that gets done on a volunteer basis. And we're kind of coming from the angle where it's great, you know, for people to volunteer their time, but it's also great for people to get paid. So we will just be discussing some different strategies, techniques, ideas behind whether or not, you know, people should be getting paid and how we can make that happen. But these are all just a bunch of ideas and thoughts, and we don't have perfect answers, but we have, I think, some good ideas, and hopefully we'll spark some conversation.
Excellent. So we are charting the course all together as a wonderful group of people that has grown over the years. And just briefly, I'm Mickey Metz. I'm a longtime member of Free Software Foundation and a longtime member of Agaric, which is a worker-owned cooperative. And we build free software platforms and website using, we're based in Drupal mostly, but we work with a lot of other technologies. And I'll pass that on to Chris.
Hi, everybody. Chris Thompson, go by Wolken online usually. Do some software development with Agaric and am primarily involved with the infrastructure items. Work with the May 1st Technology Infrastructure Group and with helping to kick off the co-op cloud with Autonomic Cooperative in the UK. And yeah, basically.
Oops, sorry.
No problem. And yep, and I'm Keegan Rankin. I am a short-term member of Agaric so far, maybe for about a year and a half, I think. But I've been working closely with Agaric for 3 or 4 years now, and it's been a great experience transitioning from entirely different fields of study. I studied previously environmental science and you know, one of the issues that I found was that I was having a hard time with in my personal growth was, you know, trying to actually figure out how we can get funding from, you know, putting research and time into building these great technologies and then actually move some of those funds into, you know, how do we actually implement those things at scale, which tends to be a problem that I see. So I'm happy to, you know, at least, you know, have moved into a field where I feel like I get to implement some things that are interesting and I think, you know, for good social causes. So that's been a great transition for me, and I'm happy to be here.
Great. And this is my mentor, Leopold Hart. We blame everything on him. You know how a programmer can use a rubber ducky sometimes? Well, this is our little rubber ducky. And he does all the bad stuff. We do all the good stuff. And now into the slides. So who pays for software development? If any of you work at corporations or companies that have a hierarchical relationship with their workers, usually a business invests capital into software, and the easiest route, of course, is to buy packaged software that is usually non-free, usually proprietary, and they just tell you to use it. You have no voice in this in most corporations. So, and this is also in institutions where, as you probably know, for years, Microsoft and Apple give software to these companies and institutions and give equipment so that people kind of get locked into a an environment. Anyone else like to comment on this?
Yeah, sure. Chris, you can go ahead. I saw you unmuting.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that, I mean, you know, investing, by giving things away, they're investing in the data set that these places provide to them. So it's not just a free handout. Your data pays for it in some ways. Anyway, go ahead, Keegan. I don't know much to say on the first few slides.
Sure. That's all right. This, I think, you know, we see several different things happening in the free software world, which we'll get into a little bit more detail on, you know, as we move forward. But, you know, as far as, you know, people being able to volunteer time, you know, one of the ways that it gets paid for is by, you know, the developers who are offering their free time actually, you know, being able to have that free time, which often, you know, they need to have some form of support, right? Whether that's another job, they've already have some wealth, or maybe their job pays them to build free software, which I think is a great scenario. But yeah, there are many, many different scenarios in which ways that the software gets paid for, which you can see on the slide here. We don't need to go through all of them.
Right. And our slides will be available right now in the lower left-hand corner. You can see a little download arrow. And so we have some ideas on how to switch your organization to free software and basically do a little research, see if there's free software that is available that suits the needs that you have in your company. And we're always bringing things to the table in Agaric when we find a free utility. And we introduce it to the group in our weekly meetings, usually, or just say, hey, come over here, look at this. And we've got a few references on the slide to websites that can help you find free software that suits your needs.
One item that I wanted to mention on here that we missed, they probably run some non-free JavaScript if you're concerned with that, but alternative2.net is, I mean, I've been finding it as an invaluable resource to find free software. They have, you know, look up whatever proprietary program you might have used in the past or whatever, and click on alternatives, and then click on the open source button, and you get a nice list.
Yeah, sadly, it's labeled the open source thing, and it's a little confusing, so that's why I didn't list it on the slide. But alternative two, it's T-O, alternativeto.net. So,
And just one last little comment there, right? Obviously, the last, if you're not able to find the software that you need, right, then maybe it's a good, maybe if it's an option, right, think about building the software yourself, which really is a little bit more the nature of this talk. But definitely first step is look to see you know, whether or not a good software exists for your suits your needs.
Yes, and ask people. Talking about it always helps. And there are always people developing things that you don't know about in their free time or, you know, at their job or whatever that you may not know about. And that's how we find a lot of really cool nuggets and things that are halfway built, almost done, or are already done and just used in-house, and they haven't had a chance to put it on the GitLab or whatever. Yeah, so one of the biggest problems I run into with people when I tell them about free software is, well, do they have a Genius Bar or do they have a tech support number that I can call and get help? Well, it's a very different world in free software. We use many methods to discuss and disseminate free software. How to get support for it. But usually you can find in GitLab or GitHub a developer or many developers who are working on the project that you're looking at to use. If it's not in, you know, like release, if there isn't a release candidate or something, maybe you can get involved and help push that forward. In the Drupal community, a lot of community members build modules that plug into Drupal, and you can get on the maintainers list and either help maintain it, or you can get in touch with maintainers and talk with them about how to deploy or use this software. It's one of the trickiest things because it's now, in these days, it's not normal to talk to other people that are real. You have to go through some Genius Bar or something where you wait in line. There's no waiting line to get help for free software. Mostly talking about it and asking people.
In terms of making money with free software, though, this is definitely one way that you can do it if you have the skills. You know, sharing your expertise, putting on classes, being a support person. Doing paid support and whatnot is certainly a good way of making some money.
Yes, and making yourself known in developer circles and elsewhere on your blogs and tweets, etc. Let people know you work with this free software and are happy to help people with it. It's a really friendly way, and we've made so many friends around the world with this method that it's wonderful. It's a community that's without borders. So that's...
I mean, so I just want to mention also, right, Agaric, we build Drupal sites, but we also provide Drupal support and training for people who use those sites. And we are also a client of several other organizations that host and maintain and help to train on how to use other free softwares that we use, right, like Nextcloud. And so,
yeah. It's a living, breathing community, but it's invisible to some people, and especially to non-developers. So as I say in every presentation I ever do, it's make some friends with developers, you know, constantly be asking people, do you know any developers? Do you know any programmers? I'm not a developer myself, but I'm surrounded by them. I know people all over the world that develop things, and I don't write a line of code myself, but it comes in handy to have friends and to make sure that they get paid and to help make sure that they get paid and introduce them to some channels like that. So a common question from developers that have worked in the proprietary area are, if I build free software, someone will steal my code. You should be so lucky. No. but yeah, I'll let the developers speak to this. Chris, what do you think about stealing code?
Actually, I'll have more to say about it later, but I mean, for one thing, you do, you don't give up the copyright. If somebody does take your code and uses it elsewhere, you know, they have to give it a different name and whatnot. And Yeah, I mean, you know, somebody can certainly fork things, but you still have your original and you still can continue to build upon it. There's also there's also the opportunity to use multiple licenses with your software if you wanted to do a paid version. You know, it's not as though you can't charge for free software, but I would say it's probably the exception rather than the rule, just given the nature of the software, of course. But, you know, in some instances, you could pay for a different licensing option to your software so that they don't have to keep it under GPL, for example.
Right.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of instances, I think, where a group of people start a project on a free software license and particularly a non-recursive one because they're kind of on the edge about, you know, whether or not they want to keep free software license or, you know, just like how they want to manage their project moving forward. And that gives them a little bit of, you know, just a little bit of freedom to, you know, tilt one way or the other. And this is kind of getting to the second bullet point, actually. Someone will outcompete my business, right? Is, you know, there was an organization, they built a software called ShareTribe. And this is one of those examples, right, where they're kind of on the edge about what direction they want to go with their licensing. And essentially some other business started using their software and, you know, started, gaining a lot of their income, so they switched over to what's it called, I can't remember what they're called, the word's not in my head right now, but that's okay. It's source available licensing, right? There we go. So they switched over to a source available license, which still involves having, you know, the source code open and, you know, people can change it, but I think for them there was just a stipulation that, you know, big corporations can't continue, you know, that can't take this code and use it. So that was the direction they switched away from the free software license. And I understand that, you know, what they were thinking, but I'm also curious to know, you know, what if they had gone with, you know, a recursive free software license, right? Or what if they had used the AGPL, you know, and would the business that was out competing them had those resources and still wanted to continue using that software if they weren't able to, say, you know, build some, you know, malware or, you know, spyware tracking systems into that software, right? Would they still have wanted to? Would that still be a problem? I think that's a great conversation, and I don't think we can dive too deep into that one, but. But it as far as, you know, it does relate to, you know, is the question of does keeping my software on a free software license, does that present me with a viable, you know, business model? And that was definitely the question in mind for ShareTribe, and they did move away from that. But yeah, I'm always curious. Why didn't you just choose the AGPL? You know, then it wouldn't have been a problem. I don't know.
Yeah, licensing is a very deep area. It's really hard to get your head around when you first look at it. But take a look at some of the licenses, see if there's anything that you could help improve, even, or it gives you a better way to explain it to people, people in companies that you know. Like as they're maturing to use free software, I call it, you know, getting off the shelf. So there's many development strategies. Agaric uses most, if not all of these. Cooperative building, we reach out to developers that are freelancing and are maybe very knowledgeable about a certain software, and we can pull them into a project. Agaric members get pulled into other projects that people are working on. So cooperative building means just a bunch of people talking about how to make this thing work. There's shared resources, like, of course, GitLab, and how you can share snippets and a gist and all kinds of things there. And customization of code. You don't have to make money selling your whole, you know, code or, you know, doing a whole package deal. You can make a great living just customizing code. As I said, Agaric is has experience in Drupal, and we do a lot of customization of people's sites, and it doesn't always involve the code, but sometimes it does. We are maintainers of over 100 modules in Drupal, so there can be instances where you create a module for one client, and then a few years later, a few months later, that becomes something you can use for another client, or, you know, pass on to another developer who has a project you're not related to, but there they are using your code, and then they can make improvements on your code too. So one of the best thing is combined billing of clients, which goes with the last thing on the list, identifying similar client needs. Agaric has a lot of clients that are news organizations. So we realized that if we build something for one, it could be useful for all. And we introduce them to it. And sometimes there is shared payment for the development of a feature for a client, and maybe 10 different sites can use this. So development becomes less costly when you identify similar client needs. And also the group planning of features is very important. I know we all wake up at 3 a.m. going, I've got the perfect thing and I'm gonna write it all up right now and release it tomorrow. But having some eyes on it really can help, it can hold back the process if you release something and then people have input to it and they say, oh, I don't like this because it doesn't have this in it. I wish I was there when they made it. You know, well, reach out to people, get in some developer circles and say, hey, I'm thinking of developing this, or I just started this. Let me show you my, you know, first few lines of code. And people in groups can have great ideas. Right now, Agaric is working with a group of people, developers and non-developers, to create Visions Unite, which is, in a nutshell, kind of a platform that helps, it uses sortition to help build, to help discuss and formulate ideas for software and things that are needed by a lot of people. And it's an easy way to keep the noise out of the development process using sortition. But that's at visionsunite.org, and you can see for yourself and come get involved. Any thoughts on this, Keegan, Chris?
Just to clarify for anyone that doesn't know, sortition is just a fancy word for random selection, basically. So it's to get a, you know, move away from any electoral process and, you know, try to remove the aspect of people seeking power. Since we, you know, good thing to avoid anyone who's seeking power, they probably shouldn't have it. But
right, right.
But Visions Unite, just the last thing I'll say on that, is just an information distribution system, you know, just a way for people to, as a community, moderate what content is important for other people in the same group. But that's right. Not what we're here to talk about.
Right. Yes. But it's wonderful.
It is wonderful. I don't think I have any other comments here.
Yeah, I was just going to say that in terms of identifying similar client needs, I mean, you know, there are a lot of, unfortunately, like underfunded community organizations and stuff like that. And, you know, really doing a lot of reach out to those groups and trying to get them together to work on something together, you know, whatever their common needs might be, you know, that can go a long ways. And it was basically covered, you know, spreading out the cost of the development over a much larger group, and you know, consequently also helping a lot more people that might not get it otherwise. So.
Cool. Okay. So funding strategies. This is a homework thing. We're not diving deeply into this or talking about it, but something for you to take home in your head. How free software projects that achieved funding did it. And there are many different methods. Drewtopia is a Drupal project that is available right now. We've got many of our clients using it, and they all share in the benefits of new developments on it. So any new modules or things we develop for Drewtopia, all the clients that are using it get the benefit of it. There's the Signal Messenger, which is a hell of an app. It's pretty intense, and so you can look at how they got funding, as well as Godot and Blender, Inkscape. Our friend Martin is a maintainer there, and he does many things, like he has some channels on YouTube or Odyssey, PeerTube, and other channels like that. We discouraged by YouTube's horrible veer into the wherever. but yeah, Odyssey is a great alternative to that. So having your own channel, your blog or your video can really help outreach and get the word around.
So I'll just say here that there, you know, these represent several of these are, you know, pretty big free software projects that have really, you know, gained a lot of funding and following and have, you know, large communities around them. And so understanding how they, you know, achieved such is something that I've only started to try to look into a little bit more so that I can speak more to this, you know, general question of how do free software projects get a lot of funding. Right. And several of the things that we see by looking through some of these, right, involve either, you know, big, you know, I guess like common things are, you know, a small group of people starting something, not necessarily with a lot of money, right? And then once they have something, then they're able to get, you know, either investments or they're able to get a grant, or, you know, some of these groups are using, you know, have Open Collective or Patreon accounts, you know, just like, so there are several different methods. But I guess I'll just mention about Drewtopia, right, where I think this is the Drupal distribution that Agaric, you know, contributes a lot to. And I think the goal of Drewtopia was to turn it into a platform cooperative, right, so that you could have all these different people who use Drewtopia, mainly grassroots organizations, talking together and, you know, pooling their money together and figuring out where should we allocate this and, you know, what should we develop next. I would say that's more of like a goal of where we want Drewtopia to get to. But for now, it's a little bit more, right? We have a bunch of different clients and a lot of them have many different needs. And we just try to find what their common needs are so that we can, you know, at least try to work with what people need and then think, all right, well, how can we, you know, maybe these people are willing to pay for this and these people are willing to pay for this. So it's a little bit looser and maybe not quite exactly what we want the ultimate goal to be for, you know, how a software should get built, but still effective and still, you know, an example of a, you know, a good practice in trying to build a tool that's going to be useful for a large number of people.
Right. So I'm going to speed this up a little because we've got to get to Q&A. But the most important thing on this slide is right at the bottom, agaric.coop/devpaid. That is a living document where we'd love to discuss with you and hear some ideas on how you get paid and ideas for how others can get paid. That will come again. This slide we've pretty much talked about. This is how Agaric does it. We do work for hire. We have Drewtopia where multiple clients are paying that Keegan just spoke to. And we provide training. We did mention that. We want to bring up Open Collective. Is that an option? Open Collective, for those who don't know, is a wonderful site where you can fund your projects through people joining and donating or contributing. And it's all transparent, done in the open, so everyone can see how you're raising money for this project. So I would suggest you take a look at opencollective.com. Anyone want to say anything about Open Collective? I'll get to the next slide on it. This, I just explained what it is. So
I'll just mention that there's also snowdrift.coop, which we failed to mention, but Loris pointed it out. Thank you. That also is a way of funding projects. I forget exactly how their model works, but it is unique, and they've been putting it together for a good while.
Yes.
So, yeah.
It's wonderful. I'm a board member of snowdrift.coop, and the reason I didn't mention is we're not quite ready, but we're working towards our end goal of releasing this to the public very soon. We've got all our paperwork almost done. So yeah, this is the year that people will get to see snowdrift.coop, and it is a unique model for funding. Like, you see what's been funded, how much, and then if you want to chip in on that, or, you know, get it going a bit more, you can. So there's like a chart of who's, you know, what's getting funded, and you can jump in and see what the track record is. You're not just blindly funding something. So as for ideas and suggestions, there are many of them. Our friend Gus Austin has talked about integrating Open Collective with free software sites like Drupal.org, making it easier for developers to get paid and to automate the acknowledgement of contributors. Transparency is pretty much everything in this area. You can see where your money is going, where your ideas and suggestions are going. And Dr. Mo, Martin Owens, has a wonderful talk at Libre Planet a little while ago about allowing users the benefit of paying you and empowering them by asking them to contribute, making them a part of the whole thing. So we're coming up on the hour, so we'd like to get to questions and answers, if there are any questions.
Thank you very much for the presentation, Chris.
We have resources, links. And then,
first, I have to. I am sorry because I was on the wrong page in my program, so I introduced you wrong. Of course, we're talking about should developers get paid for work, and not about do-it-yourself browsers. I'm sorry. Let's start with the Q&A now.
we have to 410, right?
Yeah. Hello, my name is Bob, and I'm here in the room. And some of us were having the discussion about the free software problem of supply and demand. And now I'm a free software guy on the supply side, but there's a lot of other people who are using it on the demand side. And they often get frustrated at finding good support for them in their use of free software. And I was wondering if you had any pointers to where they could look, or how do we connect supply and demand in the free software world, where we have people, you know, like me, techie, maybe producing it, but other people saying they're struggling to find people to help them.
Huh, that's a good question.
Well, a lot of free software people tend to hide behind free software tools, unfortunately. You know, there's a general reluctance to use social platforms and things of that nature, where most people do look to be found, to find people. So, you know, there's some difficulties there. And kind of going back to, you know, some like old fashioned methods, you know, word of mouth and getting out and meeting people and that sort of thing, you know, is pretty important for us to get known and to get found. because of those limitations. I otherwise, spend some time up in your SEO game so that you can actually be found via a general search in a particular locality and stuff.
There's also things like Mastodon.com, for members of social.coop, which should have been a resource and link on the slides. But as I've said, we've got at the first link on this slide is where we can talk and have comments, and you can post ideas and links that you know of that could make this easier. But yeah, Chris is right. We're hiding in a way to protect our free software mantle. But using things like Mastodon can really help. So
yeah, I don't mean it to be a criticism. I'm sorry. I know it didn't sound the friendliest the way that I said it, but I mean it's unfortunate. But we don't want to use that software, but.
Right.
At the same time, it is an easier way to be found anyways.
I will not be on TikTok saying these things, but I wish I could, but.
All right, I have a bit of a follow-up question. So you mentioned that Agaric offers kind of code for hire, and I kind of understand what that would be, adding a new Drupal plugin or authoring something like that, and also training and how to, I guess, operate the system. But you didn't, is support on the list? And why or why not? Did you find there was a scalability problem with people coming to you for being on the hook for supporting their custom solutions? Or do you also do support? And how does that scale for you guys?
The work that we offer is on retainer typically. We're available to our clients whenever they need us. We have some people that just keep a small retainer with us because, they might have for example, with one client in particular, we have a standing meeting that's on every Thursday at 12:30, for example. And, they just have that time slice reserved. If they've had any questions come up during the week, we can meet then and hash them all out at that time. One thing to mention that we are pretty small. We're under a dozen people. We're six now. Six seems right. Yeah. So we're pretty small, but It's been fine. Our day to day, just getting things, keeping things upgraded. We have to do a fair amount of work on modules that we've maintained on Drupal.org to keep things up to date and whatnot. And when we create a custom module for somebody, it's not their module. I don't think we've ever actually done that.
No.
It's built in a way that other people can use it, and it's published to Drupal.org. At times somebody will just open a support ticket on it and, we'll take a look at that. Of course, if it's not something that we can afford to look at right at the moment, it might take a little longer, but, we've got all those modules there that we do support, so.
And we're also members of mayfirst.org, which is a cooperative, a hybrid co-op that we offer a suite of free tools, like our own version of Jitsi, which has interpretation in it that makes it really easy to host international meetings. So when I'm working with MayFirst, I'm also a board member there. I do a lot of tech support for the tools that MayFirst offers, like Nextcloud and Jitsi, et cetera. So offline, people will be, writing to me asking, or writing to MayFirst, and I'll pick up the queue and I'll schedule a time and donate a half an hour of my time to show them how to use Nextcloud or how to get set up with how to use Jitsi, and it's really valuable time because they spread the knowledge that, hey, our organization is now using Nextcloud. We don't have to use Google services anymore. Yay! And that's just such a great feeling. It's like Christmas or, you know, like holiday when that happens.
That one is a pretty good one. Transitioning to Nextcloud was very liberating.
Yes, people are overjoyed. Do we have another question?
Just sort of a follow-up point. The prior speaker said pretty much what I was going to say, but I work in a not software for-profit company and fight that fight all the time of trying to get them to adopt free software tools and just that whole mindset. And of course, probably the biggest pushback I get from IT departments is exactly that support piece of, hey, if it breaks, I want somebody to pick up the phone now when I call them. And kind of the corollary to that as well is they want to have one number to call. I mean, so that's a lot of the appeal of, like, you know, my Google Docs or Microsoft 365, right? It's everything rolled in one, so whatever breaks, I can just call one number. So I do see that as a little bit of a hurdle to this kind of, you know, to the support model for smaller pieces of software like this, where, you know, a big company is going to have, would have to have some kind of support or retainer relationship or something with dozens or hundreds of small software providers. Again, not insurmountable. It should be something to manage, but it's another thing like the IT department has to think about and manage. So I don't know the solution to that. Unless 500 organizations get together and have collective support support contracts. Sounds great. I haven't heard of anybody trying to do that yet, but maybe that's the next step.
1-800 free software help. Yes.
I was unaware that you could actually call Google.
Yes. Can you call Zoom and ask them for help? Can you call Google? Yeah. No.
But yeah, I mean, that is another way of getting paid for writing free software as well. Go to work for Red Hat or Collabora or Canonical or GitLab or whomever else. Smaller projects definitely don't have a large corporation behind them, but, you know, there's Redux and MongoDB and GitLab and HashiCorp, and, you know, there are a number of these of free software products that do have a company behind them now that does offer support. So,
and there's definitely room for a free software cooperative to offer a tech help desk. That would be a really wonderful thing. And it could be made up of many people who, you know, donate or their time part-time and possibly create a way to get paid for income. Like maybe people pay by the minute for tech support on a phone call, or, you know, hire a developer for a few hours to take a look at something from a pool of developers in a free software cooperative. So that's something we've been trying to bring to life in our luxury time, our spare time. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, no, that sounds like a great model. Of course, like, getting it started is all the trick there, where you need a minimum pool.
Yeah.
But you do have a few experts in the, you know, 400 most common pieces of software to offer generic support like that. So, yeah, interesting and great work. I appreciate what you guys are doing and driving this conversation. Really interesting.
Thank you.
It
is. It's fascinating. That's why we're here.
I will say, you know, one of the things that we do as part of Agaric is collaborate with other cooperatives, right? And work with other cooperatives. I meet with a group of other cooperatives every week, just around the world. And, you know, these are big parts of the conversations that we have, or, yes, you know, how do we work together to, you know, get this, the kind of infrastructure that we all need, and, you know, have serious conversations about how do we choose what our standards are, you know? And those are really hard questions to answer, because obviously, you know, everyone has different preferences about what their software should do. But I do think that those are, you know, at least the cooperative world that we're a part of does represent a small piece, you know, of people who are trying to do that and collectivize to, you know, to get you know, a solid piece of infrastructure up so that we can, you know, share,
right.
share, you know, those kinds of resources.
Yeah, there are cooperative principles specifically. There's like the 7 cooperative principles, and cooperatives working with cooperatives is one of them. So,
yes. So to that end, talking about it, meeting people, being in the place where people gather. To that end, we are sponsoring an after party, which is tomorrow evening at 6. And we can schedule many more of these if people are interested, where we get together and talk about the things that our presentation here was based on. And maybe we can build that tech support cooperative that is international, multilingual, and vested in supporting all kinds of free software. And we could grow it to a very large group, just judging from the people we've been in touch with through our life in Agaric. So here's the link. Community Bridge is running a big blue button server. So anonymity is welcome. If you'd like to pop in and join our discussion, tomorrow at 6 will be the first one. We'll try to get a schedule of them up, and having people come in and meet each other, meet people that are working on projects that may need help. They may need you as a developer, or you may have a project that you need help on, or just need advice, or you want to learn. Someone who's not a developer that wants to learn how to develop or how to meet other developers. So we'd love to see you there tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern time. And the link is just LP2023. So communitybridge.com is where we can do that.
And do note the access code FSF. We can make sure to actually put that on the room description too when you get to that page, so that you don't have to remember that. But
right. That will be all on the intro page.
But definitely happy to keep this conversation alive. And obviously something that we don't have time to cover everything that we might like to during this session. But yeah, lots to talk about.
Yeah, I'll have to say that I had a couple of individuals that were, you know, making money with free software that I'd like to talk about, but I can save it for that.
Yes, I think we're at the end of the time.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you everyone for having the giving presentation and the nice discussion, and also for the extended invitation for tomorrow night.
Yes.
And with this, we close this presentation. Thank you very much again.
Hey, everybody. Thanks.